It is Saturday, February 2nd, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, a bit about the Week in Geek News and a discussion with the father of free software, Richard Stallman.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
A month ago, I asked if there were musicians listening to Geek Speak that might have a consideration for us for a new theme. Well, Justin Abini of the band Ubu Gogo submitted this for our consideration. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today we're doing the Week in Geek News, and we are hoping to have Richard Stallman, the father of free software, here in just moments. During the second half of the show, welcome to join our conversation. You can ask us anything you would like. The numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Geek Speak is supported by Business of Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, Notary Public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com.
Join us for live coverage of Super Tuesday 2008. California, New York, Illinois, Missouri, and Georgia are just the largest of the 24 states holding election contests, and they could very well determine the major party's presidential nominees. KUSP will bring you live coverage of the returns, candidate speeches, and expert analysis and reports on local reactions to the results. Join us for Super Tuesday 2008 from NPR News, Tuesday evening at 5 p.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air and with me are geeks Drew Meyer, product manager at Network Appliance. Morning, Drew.
Good morning.
Miles Elam, geek and student. Miles.
Good morning.
Well, hopefully we'll have Richard Stallman, assuming he gets here on time. But in any case, let's do some geek news from the week. Miles, I'll start with you.
It's been a bad day for internet access all around the world, and specifically in the U.S., a lot of iPhone users are really angry in the Midwest.
Oh, really? What's going on?
The Edge network, which is the data network over the cell phone lines for AT&T services, went down for all users from Chicago to Kansas.
That's a lot of people.
Right. And they were saying they were trying to get it fixed as soon as possible, but it may go on as long as February 5th, and I don't have an update to see if it's back up yet or not. But that was one case. The other one, which is actually far more severe.
It happened earlier in the week, right?
Right. Although many people do love their iPhones and want to have, you know, their service, it was far more severe. The internet outage in a good portion of Asia and parts of Africa, where a good 75% of people were cut off due to some anchors. Now, there's been some strangeness with regard to that, because the first time it was an undersea cable and it being cut, the break in it was being blamed on a anchor being dragged along the bottom and cut the cable.
Right.
However, now it's looking like there are three cables that have been cut in different areas, all by a dragged anchor.
Oh, man. So how many people is this affecting? I mean,
close to a billion. I believe the numbers that I saw were something along the lines of 950 million.
Wow.
And it isn't so much that there's no internet access, but there is such a severe slowdown that it's basically cut off.
Okay, well, good. We do have Richard. He came in. And Larry. Larry, you can join us as well if you'd like. We'll go ahead and try to set up enough headphones and mics as we go through the geek news. Drew, next story for you, sir, while we're setting up.
I'd love to. Let's see. There's a couple of interesting things going on, but let me just talk a little bit about what I was doing earlier this week. I went to the Citrix Summit 2008, which is a reseller event for a lot of people that buy our products are also Citrix resellers. Citrix is a big company, about $1 billion, works closely with Microsoft and provides historically terminal service products where they take signals from your computer and send and exchange them over long distances from a central computer, a really big mainframe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an alternative to the way a lot of people do computing work, and it keeps things very secure and stable. I purchased a company called ZenSource up in Washington in October or so, and they launched at this conference their new Zen Server product, which is a server virtualization product. You know, for most people, you won't ever know that this is happening, but as a benchmark in the industry of interesting things that are going on and a challenge to the major, I can't emphasize enough how big a player the company called VMware is in this industry.
That's true. They're the definition right now.
They are the definition. They're the market leader. They're technologically quite advanced. But Zen Server, now backed by Citrix, us folks in the storage industry and the virtualization industry are looking to see that start to shift. Or certainly, it's nice to have a second runner in there.
Sure.
From everybody's real-life perspective, like I said, you won't really see this. But if you are running a website or if you're familiar with if you're hosting your own pages somewhere, there's another firm out there called Virtuoso. They're called Parallels now. The company's called SWSoft. And you may be familiar with something called Plesk. Plesk is a competitor, is a virtualization software tool. So anyway, all that to say that it was a very interesting show, some major advancements in server virtualization technologies, some new competition for VMware, and probably better market health for all of us.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the news story. Now, Miles is getting mics and everything, so I'm going to go to your next news story while he's doing that.
You bet. Being an Idaho boy born and bred, I was excited to see the new news from Micron and Intel. Micron is a RAM manufacturer in Boise, Idaho, in fact, the only one still left in the United States. Micron and Intel have announced plans have made claims that they've boosted solid-state drive speeds by 500%. Now, for me, a guy in the storage industry, that's pretty amazing and exciting sort of an advancement. That solid-state memory is essentially disk or large capacity, like a USB thumb key, which everybody's familiar with, but really big. And in this case, 500% faster. So when you're talking about graphic design or rendering or server farms that are demanding tremendous amounts of application data to be transferred and used all at the same time, a big boost like that can really change the way that web farms and rendering farms work.
Great. Great. Thank you very much for that.
It's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Miles, I'm actually going to ask you to go ahead and sit down and give us the next news story, if you wouldn't mind.
I got another one here on Pirate Bay, which is always fun.
Pirate Bay is always good.
Everybody wants to be a pirate. Pirate Bay, if you're not familiar with it, and not a lot of people are, it's worth looking up on Wikipedia. It's exciting. It's cool. It's off the wall. It's an abandoned, not oil derrick, but a drilling platform in the North Sea off the coast of Sweden. And it's gone through some crazy historic and legal battles and doesn't apparently have any there's no municipality, there's no rulers. It's an independent nation state, if you will, on top of the ocean. And they've also got broadband access out there, or a really high speed access to this platform.
Are they still totally functional right now? They're still up and around? Because we hear them being taken down every once in a while and quite a bit of battling, if you will.
And that's what's going on. There's a lot of discussion. The Swedish government is kind of feeling responsible for this. They've gone through 4,000 pages of documentation in an 18-month investigation to try to sink this quote unquote ship. And have them stop distributing software, stop distributing pornography, stop hosting websites that can't be hosted in other locations. And the folks that are out there kind of believe that this is a freedom of expression at the core of it, and that they're not bound by any other sovereign than themselves, and they're able to continue doing this and planned and expect quite nicely to continue doing it. So the story is that there's been an increase in focus from the Swedish government on Pirate Bay. If you want to read more about it, just Google Pirate Bay. The whole backstory is more interesting to me than the actual case.
And all the news stories that we do, we try to update on the GeekSpeak website. So if we're learning anything else that we haven't covered, go ahead and go to geekspeak.org to learn more. And we will be with Richard Stallman in just a moment. This is GeekSpeak. I feel like we're starting Geek Speak again with our theme running in. Well, we are all set up with Richard Stallman and Larry. Larry, what's your last name?
Kafiro.
Hang on. I'm sorry. Bring his mic again? Up. We're getting ourselves together here.
Larry.
Kafiro.
Kafiro. Okay. So, Larry, you run the Cabrillo College GNU Linux Users Group, and you also have a business where you help people get free on their computer.
That's correct, yeah.
All right. So do you...
Get free. You got to back up and define that.
We'll cover that pretty well. And Miles, would you like to introduce Richard Stallman?
Yes. Richard Stallman, the only computer scientist ever to win the MacArthur Foundation Fellow Program Genius Award. Is that correct? This MIT Artificial Intelligence Lab alum fought against the trend in software and business to create barriers to collaboration. Richard Stallman, more commonly known online by his handle RMS, is the founder and lead architect of the GNU Project and the Free Software Foundation. During his career, he has created such notable works as the GNU C compiler, Emacs, and a large part of the software infrastructure to projects like GNU Linux. He does not advocate open source software, nor giving software away for free. Free software refers to freedom of speech, also known as Libre software, and the freedom to maintain and modify your software.
I better correct that a little bit.
Go for it.
I say, think of free speech, not free beer, to explain which meaning of the word free you should use to understand free software. But I'm not saying it's the same freedom as freedom of speech. It's a freedom. It's an issue of freedom. There are four essential freedoms that define free software. These are freedom zero, the freedom to run the program as you wish, which many proprietary user subjugating programs won't even give you. And then freedom one is the freedom to study the source code and then change it so the program does what you wish, which means you are in control rather than the developers using the program to control you. Freedom two is the freedom to help your neighbor, which is the freedom to distribute exact copies when you wish. And that could mean giving them away or selling them. They're both legitimate. And freedom three is the freedom to contribute to your community, which is the freedom to distribute copies of your modified versions when you wish. And once again, this could be giving them away or selling them. We're not concerned with whether money changes hands. That's a side issue. But we are concerned about freedom. These four freedoms are essential freedoms that every computer user, every software user must have. Non-free software is unethical and shouldn't exist. So listening to this news story about Citrix and ZenSource, I mean, all this user subjugating proprietary software that if you value your freedom, you won't use, and that is just a trap for people, for the people who don't value their freedom enough to recognize that they should say no.
It made me
want to tear my hair out. I didn't say anything because
I appreciate it. I want to put this in context, kind of in the home perspective. We all value, you know, where we live and understand that we own our couch and we can do what we want. If we want to cut our couch in half because we can't fit it between, you know, into our house, we can do that. We can modify
or reupholster
anything.
Reupholster it.
Yeah, whatever we want to do. We can repaint our kitchen. So there's a lot of things you can do in your home, but if you have a computer, chances are there's stuff on there that legally you're not supposed to be able to do, even though you own everything in it. There's this idea that you don't really own it, you own a license for it, and therefore there's restrictions.
Right. They don't believe in private property, you know. With free software, your copy is your property, but the proprietary software companies, they don't believe in private property because their idea of private property is everything belongs to them, which is a parody of private property.
Right. Now, do you think that this comes up in the business world because this fear that the resources they sink into developing software, they won't be able to recoup because it's so easy to share software?
That's already making mistaken assumptions, because it's not as if they put in all this effort to develop the software and then ask how are they going to release it. It's part of the plan from the beginning.
Right.
And the plan is bad. If the only way you could develop a certain program is by releasing it on terms that subjugate and tie up the users, you shouldn't do it. We can wait, because progress is not as important as freedom.
So what do you suggest that folks do? You know, remember, most of our audience is not as powerful a user as you are.
Programmers. Right?
Users or programmers. Certainly not fewer programmers listen to the show than just regular folks who want to use a computer to accomplish pretty simple goals, relatively speaking.
You can do all that with the GNU plus Linux system now.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy to use nowadays. In the 1990s, it was hard. We didn't have graphical interfaces, but now we do. So now it's no harder to use than Windows would be.
Something like Ubuntu Project.
Well, I wouldn't want to recommend that because it contains non-free software.
I noticed that you
lots of versions of GNU/Linux are easy to use. Most of them, unfortunately, contain some non-free software, so I can't recommend them. But if you look at GNU.org, you'll see on the homepage a link to the list of free distros. But in any case, the crucial point is that you were raising, I think, is that most computer users don't know how to program, and most of them don't want to learn. So they're not going to personally study and change the source code. That's why Freedom 3 is essential, the freedom to distribute copies of your modified versions, which means that those of us who are programmers, when we make changes, we can release our changed versions and you can install them. You don't have to be a programmer to get the benefit of the fact that all the users have these freedoms, because those of us who do know how to program, we will make changes and we will publish modified versions, and when you like those changes, you can have them. Well, when you don't like them, you don't have to have them.
No, so I want to give an idea of how pervasive this idea exists in our lives all the time. And I'm going to take music, for example. A lot of people that own their own music on their computers are using a format which actually is owned – part of the format, if you will, is owned by someone else through a patent.
It's controlled or restricted.
Controlled and restricted.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about MP3s. So if you own a collection of MP3s and they're important to you, the actual way to play that MP3 and manage that MP3, the codec, if you will, has restrictions upon it, legal restrictions. And that's – can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, there are free MP3 codecs. Some distributors – are afraid to distribute them. They're afraid they'll be attacked by the patent holder. But software patents are a different issue from the issue of free software. We should avoid using MP3. We should move to a patent-safe codec, or at least one we think is patent-safe, such as Ogg Vorbis.
Guys, hang on a sec. I was just about to ask about Ogg Vorbis, but for the folks out there listening who have MP3s, when you say a codec versus the format of the file, you're saying they should go out and convert their entire MP3 collection into Ogg Vorbis?
I don't think so.
No, I'm just trying to enlighten the idea that this is very pervasive. We ignore it completely. We have freedoms that are impinged upon that we're not even aware of.
Well, there's not enough.
I fully understand this, you might as well let me clear it up.
Yeah, go for it.
Tell us about the pain, Richard. Why does this matter to
me? If you have an MP3, there's no need to do anything to it. First of all, MP3 and Ogg Vorbis are both lossy codecs, which means every conversion you do, you lose quality. So if you're good, that's why when you're going to make one of those formats, you should make it from a high quality master, from the highest quality you can. So don't make an Ogg Vorbis from an MP3 or make an MP3 from an Ogg Vorbis. Make them both from the CD. That way, when you make the lossy format, you'll get the best possible quality in it. But if you've got an MP3 file, what you should do is get a free program that can play it. Although some distributors are afraid to distribute it, you won't have any trouble finding it.
And they're afraid to distribute it because technically there's a patent conflict
possibly. Well, not a patent conflict. There is a patent, and they have been threatened with being sued, but there are places you can find it. And the patent holder won't bother suing individuals. It's not worth their while.
I just wanted to say that because you were coming on the show, I went ahead and translated all the – and there's only a month of shows on our website. I made Ogg Vorbis copies so that people can use Ogg Vorbis to do Geek Speak.
And we need to distribute a player, though, don't we?
Well, there's
right.
players out there.
Well,
definitely.
You could just make a link to playogg.org.
There we go.
Which is our site where we tell people how to install Ogg players.
Well,
fantastic.
I want to get back to this idea because I know that it's pretty.
The point is that, though, there's no reason if you've got an MP3 file, there's no reason you need to do anything to it. You can just listen to it and get a free player. But when you're going to release material, that's where it really matters what formats to make available.
Right.
You should make it available in Ogg formats. For audio, that's Ogg Vorbis. For video, that's Ogg Theora. For speech recordings, you can use Ogg Speaks, which is a very efficient sound codec it's very efficient for speech.
So I think some of the things that, that Drew is talking about has to do with, like, can is this simple enough for my grandma to understand? Like, if I took off all the MP3s and I made copies from my originals of Org Vorbis on geekspeak.org, and then I said, hey, go listen to the shows. We've got a giant archive. It's gonna. There's going to be a boundary because someone's going to have to get the player, and it's going to be difficult. So, Larry—
It's not very difficult. Take a look at playog.org.
Yeah,
we
yeah,
set
I'll
it
link
up to be
it.
Easy.
And you have multiple OSs and everything. That's yeah. pretty nice. But I wanted to talk that it, there is more technical challenges in some ways on running completely free software. Larry, you do this as part of your a living. You translate people into a free computer use. How challenging is it?
It's— first of all, let me back up. It's yeah. part of my living. I don't make a living off of this,
it's
as a lot of people don't,
yeah.
Unfortunately. Transferring people to a free software environment is actually not as difficult, again, as Richard said, as it was maybe 10 years ago, which is why I think GNU Linux and the free software it's actually ready for prime time at the moment. We don't have much of a problem like converting people. People see what's out there.
Tell us about your average customer. Like, who asks for this? Is it a guy like us who really understands fundamentally this, or someone else?
No, unfortunately, the people who are kind of involved in computers kind of know what's going on, and the average person, someone who might consider their computer like as a, you know, television or a toaster or something
yeah.
as an appliance rather yeah. than a, as you know something more, which it is, are the kind of people that I want to help to convert to free software.
Yeah. And how do they ask the question, or how do you sell them on the concept that they ought to change, or that there's a benefit in changing when what they have works okay?
It depends on how you define as working okay.
Yeah.
You know, for example, we brought up the fact about the. A lot of people are surprised when they find out they don't own the copy of Windows they have on their computer. Okay, they go, what do you mean? And especially with now with Vista, where it sort of calls back to yeah. Redmond and checks, and then back around, one of the best examples was around Labor Day last year, that server went down. And people couldn't get on, and then all of a sudden you had a message on your machine that said, "Oh, you're using unauthorized software. You're
right.
you're a pirate.
You're illegal.
You know, you're yeah. illegal, right?" And then so
make
it's like, "Well, wait a minute. You know, I bought this.
Yeah.
How can I be illegal?"
Well, so I feel like
it's worse than that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of non-free software, Windows in particular, is designed to spy on the user, restrict the user, and even attack the user. And Mac OS also had. Windows and Mac OS, they both are designed to restrict the user. This is known as DRM, or Digital Restrictions Management.
We covered a lot on the show, actually.
And then they both also have backdoors. Windows, Vista, and Mac OS are designed so that it would be an understatement to say that that Microsoft or Apple can take control of the user's computer, because they always have it. They can install, change software at any time without asking.
Now,
I know that on OS X, there seems to always be a prompt and a password you've got to enter. Are you saying that most people don't configure that correctly?
I've been told that Mac OS X allows Apple to force an upgrade.
Oh, I didn't know about that. I haven't seen that happen on my machine.
Well, you might not see it.
Yeah.
But I'm not an expert
yeah,
on that. But I do know that Vista...
Yes.
Also,
well, for example, of last week, where machines wouldn't even work when the server was down. Miles, you've read the GPL. Can you tell me a little bit? Well, actually, maybe Richard, you should cover the GPL.
Actually,
we're getting out of
it's in the
too.
Middle of a revision, is it not?
No,
it just
we
released,
published
yeah.
version 3 in June, I believe it was. That was a revision that took us 2 years of work. And the previous version, version 2, was published in 1991, and the version 1 was in 1989. The GNU General Public License is one of various free software licenses. A free software license is simply a formal declaration by the copyright holders giving users the four freedoms.
Right.
So the GNU General Public License does this, but it does it in a particular way. It says that when you distribute copies, whether they are exact copies or modified versions or extended, you must do so respecting the freedom of the next person.
Right.
So you can't change the license, although version 3 allows a certain limited set of changes that are okay. and you must provide source code, and basically you can't strip off the freedom turning the program proprietary.
Right.
I developed this technique, which is known as copyleft, because the reason I was developing free software was not just because I hoped that would make it more popular or because I wanted more people to join in developing it. My goal was to give you freedom.
Right.
And I wanted to make sure that the middlemen wouldn't take off the freedom before you got the software, because that would defeat the purpose. So I wrote a license to make sure of this. I found a way to use copyright law, but not in the usual way to subjugate people, but rather to liberate people and make sure that they will be free.
Now, Ed, more recently there's been some hubbub in the open source world, or rather the free software world, in that Linus Torvalds, the original architect of the GNU Linux system.
No.
He wrote Linux.
Kernel of the GNU/Linux system.
Sorry.
I started developing GNU in 84, and he wrote Linux in 91, and he made it free software in 92. So you put them together, and you get a complete system.
And
why I call it GNU plus Linux.
Right. You actually get the system that we traditionally, prior to really talking with you and having you on the show, have been calling Linux. Whenever we say Linux, we're actually talking about GNU and Linux. And Linux is one part of the entire operating system.
Okay. So
in any case,
Linus Torvalds, who is the original author of Linux, has been a big advocate of the GPL version 2. And when the Free Software Foundation and you brought up the GPL version 3, there was a bit of tension there.
Not just a bit of tension. He called us rather nasty names from time to time. Torvalds never supported our ideals of freedom. He is an open source advocate.
You better define that a little bit for our audience.
You see, I started a movement for freedom in 1983 called the Free Software Movement, which is a movement that says we demand those four freedoms. We want to be in control of our computing, and we want to be free to cooperate with each other. Torvalds put Linux under the GNU GPL version 2 in 1992, but that wasn't because he agreed with our ideals of freedom. He had his own motives. Whereas we started developing GNU specifically so we could have a way to use computers in freedom, but he wrote Linux in order to have fun and learn. Now, those are good motives. I'm not going to criticize those motives, and I'm sure all of us want to have fun, and that's part of our motive for developing free software. But he didn't share our political ideals, and he's disagreed with them ever since.
So when number three came out, what was his beef?
Well, I think it has to do – I mean, it was several of them, and some of them were misunderstandings. But there's one apparently real disagreement. In the past few years, we saw a new method of trying to take away users' freedom, which we call TiVoization because it's done in the TiVo. The TiVo contains a small GNU plus Linux system, and after we complained to them, they started complying with GPL version 2, so they started giving the users the source code and so on. But they set it up so that if you modify the source code and then install your modified version, the machine won't run at all. It notices that the software has been modified and it shuts down.
That's completely against the principles, right?
It's against the principles, but GPL version 2 doesn't forbid it.
Okay.
Because when I wrote that in 91, I never imagined this way of subjugating people. So in GPL version 3, we say this is not allowed. We say if you distribute binaries in a product, you've got to provide users on demand with the information they need so that their modified versions can actually run.
Right.
This Torvalds doesn't agree with.
Okay.
So in your mind, software on a hard drive is no different from software burned onto a ROM
ROMs are an exception because that way there simply is no way to install a modified version. But the TiVo, it's not in a ROM, and the company can install a modified version. They just won't let you do that. So we haven't ruled out distributing on a ROM, but that's not what the TiVo does.
You're listening to Geek Speak. We're now taking your calls with questions and comments at technology. You are welcome to ask anything you'd like today. We're talking about freedoms and computers. So if you'd like to ask Richard Stallman, kind of the father of free software, anything about what we're talking about, you're welcome to do so right now. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's in the 831 area code. It's 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877.
KUSP co-sponsors UCSC Arts and Lectures presentation of trumpeter Hugh Masekela, one of Africa's most beloved performers, comes to the Rio Theater in Santa Cruz on Tuesday, February 5th at 8 p.m. Information at 459-2159 or online at artslectures.ucsc.edu.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. My name is Lyle Troxell. You're listening to Geek Speak. The geeks this morning, Drew Meyer and Miles Elam, and our special guests, Richard Stallman and Lair Cafino. We are talking about your freedoms on your computer. Stay tuned at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio for Castle Cottage, our children's programming hour. The phone numbers to call in with questions and comments right now, 476-2800, again, 476-2800, or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go to geekspeak.org. There's notes about what we're talking about, and a big thing that I want to mention right now. Today at Cabrillo College, in more details online at geekspeak.org, at 1 to 5, you can have pizza and talk about the GNU Linux, get GNU Linux advice at the computing lab at Cabrillo, and that is room 2504. So get in your car now, head over there if you'd like at 1 o'clock. And then Tuesday, February 4th at 6:30 p.m., again at Cabrillo College, the GNU Linux users group is having Richard Stallman speak at 6:30. So all about what we're talking about now and probably a lot more. He's a great speaker. Is that? I thought that was Tuesday.
Oh no, I'm sorry. It's Monday.
It's Monday. What?
Monday, 6:30.
Monday at 6:30. So that's the 4th.
That's correct.
I'm so sorry. Monday the 4th. Thank you, Richard, and thank you for correcting me. If you'd like more information, of course, go up to geekspeak.org or just go to the Cabrillo GNU Linux Users Group's website, which is cabrillo.edu associations CLUG CLUG.
So you get to hang out in Santa Cruz for the weekend, Richard.
I guess I do.
Have you spent time for a great weather?
All right.
Have you spent much time in Santa Cruz?
No.
No.
Well, you'll find it very familiar, I think, given your background and your viewpoints. And I think you come from Massachusetts?
I grew up in Manhattan, and I reside officially in Cambridge, Massachusetts. But I live in airports and airplanes all over the world.
Yeah. Well, Dennis Kucinich had a great fan base here in Santa Cruz, and I shed a tear when he had to drop out. I think you may have as well.
Yeah, you actually list a great list of people on as your, I guess, your Wikipedia page, which I was reading last night. You list a whole bunch of people, including Dennis Kucinich, as a someone you admire.
Yeah.
Okay, in any case.
I got a question, Lyle.
Yeah.
And this is kind of for both of you guys. When Larry, when you're helping to migrate people into free software, what tools do you use? And then Richard, I see that really, like in the last week, you've produced or released the GNUSense, I'm assuming you pronounce it, operating system?
Well, no, I didn't. GNUSense is a GNU/Linux distribution.
Right.
And I'm not the one who maintains that. Okay. Other people do that. We in the
I should say you,
project,
not
we recommend it because it's one of the entirely free distributions. That is, their policy is not to recommend any non-free software because, see, our basic principle is non-free software is a social problem. And if you present something as a solution, that contradicts saying it's a problem. So we just can't treat any non-free program as a solution.
Do you feel, I mean, in the open...
Wait, I want to hear from Larry.
Oh, thanks. Going back to migrating people, generally I ask them, we talk actually at length about what their goals or what they want to do with their computer. And most people just want to, you know, browse the web, read their email and things like that. From there, we normally give them a choice. Again, I like GNUSense with GNOME, and it works like flawlessly in all instances so far that I've used it. Some people like Ubuntu.
I see there's a new flavor of Ubuntu called Gobuntu, which is trying to align a little more closely with the free software principles. I'm not very familiar with it. Not so much?
It turns out that I saw once a Gobuntu installation, And there's a menu where you can check off which categories of software you wanted to consider for installation, including non-free ones.
And do they label those as non-free?
Yeah. So does that help? Initially, they're disabled, but you can just enable them. So.
And change it from being free software into proprietary.
Right.
So, and how do you feel about that as a solution?
I'm not satisfied with it.
Against all the principles.
I will recommend that because it presents non-free software as something you might consider installing.
Okay, so what about that? What about me wanting a piece of software? Like, I really use Photoshop.
Lyle, do you value your freedoms?
Well, I do value my freedoms, but let's say I'm willing to let go of the freedom of one application because
I won't help you do that.
You won't help me do that because you disagree with my belief. Right. That that's okay in some sense.
It's an all or nothing proposition, man. You're either on board or there's not a gray area that I can see.
No, that's not true. I mean, there are people with various views that are intermediate, but I don't want to endorse that. And
because
so if a person says, please help me install this non-free program, I have to say no.
Right. He's not saying that no one can use Gobuntu. He's saying he's not going to endorse, right?
That's well, the way you use it. If one used it in compliance with all the Free Software Foundation principles, then that would make sense.
Right.
Am I right?
It would be. But if I were to recommend Gobuntu, I wouldn't know that all the people who followed my recommendation would do that. So I'd rather recommend GNUSense, which is pretty much the same thing, except that it doesn't offer the non-free software.
Is Firefox, the Mozilla project stuff, fall under GNU? No,
it's not
it
under the GPL.
It doesn't fall under GNU. I mean, it's
they use the GPL?
Soft, the sort – no, I can't
it's
remember.
A, it's a triple license.
Yeah, I think the GPL is one of several alternatives.
Yeah.
But there's a weird thing with Firefox, unique, I believe, which is the source code is free, but the binaries they distribute are not free software. They have a special added license, and they contain a module called TalkBack, which is not free software at all. The source code's not available. They don't even have it. So you can take the Firefox source code and compile it into a free binary, and that's I have that on my machine, except it's not called Firefox because part of their requirements about the trademark Firefox is you're not allowed to use that if it's different. So if we don't include the non-free TalkBack module, we have to have a different name. So you'll find things like Ice Weasel and Ice Cat and Burning Dog.
See, Richard, I find like this is going to this whole – thing is so complicated to a person that doesn't program. Like, we're all following. We're geeking out on this. We totally love that there's this, you know, very social idea. But
if
how does
you
this
install
translate?
An entirely free distro,
yeah.
then other people have taken care of all this for you.
Okay. So,
and you don't have to know all these details unless you're curious.
See, I kind of feel like it's kind of a duty of mine as a geek to think about the social aspects of what I'm doing if I'm helping someone, to inform them upon what's going on. Like, oh, you want to use iTunes and download your music. Well, you understand that that codec is really restricted. At least switch over to MP3 so you can share them with people. Like, it's kind of my duty as a geek partially to be aware of this to help people decide what they want to do.
Right. And that's we should tell people. Yeah. But I think we should also go further, and we shouldn't personally get involved in helping people do things we think are socially bad.
Interesting.
So
that's right, Lyle.
I'm not available to help you do whatever you want. I won't switch off my conscience just because I'm helping you.
Right. Okay, let's take a call. It's going to be a totally off topic, but from Norwalk, California, Scott, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, how you guys doing today?
Quite well. What's your problem?
We're stoked. Are you kidding? This is a great show.
Yeah. I apologize for not really having a question about this topic. But when I was sitting on hold, it did bring to mind a friend of mine was telling me about how he had heard, and I'm not getting my question right away, but he had heard that the new Windows operating systems were actually going to degrade MP3 files the more you copy them, so that each copied version would actually have less quality than the previous version that you copied. I was wondering if that was true or not. I mean, I know we touched a little bit on that.
That's true of the technology. That's not necessarily something due to Vista. Vista does have many other issues with regard to...
He's talking about just copying a file on your computer between
the
two.
I don't think they could do that.
Yeah.
Right.
But they might very well do that in other ways, not with MP3 files, but with other things, yes.
Yeah, a bit of an urban legend. So what's your question today?
Okay, well, I wanted to upgrade and add more RAM to my computer, and I really can't figure out exactly how to figure out what type I have. And I also have a question about hard drives also. But
Drew, you want to help us?
Scott, I can tell you, here's the simplest thing to do. And again, you know, being from Idaho, I got to throw a plug for Micron in there. Go to Crucial.com, which is the retail memory division of Micron. Crucial.com, And they have some tools there that you can run and will analyze your machine and tell you exactly what kind of RAM, what speed, and how many pins and what the pattern for all that stuff is. Great. Naturally, then they'll recommend that you buy it from them, but you can take that information and do whatever you want with it.
Great.
That's crucial.com. We'll put it up on geekspeak.org. Yeah. There you go, Scott. It is a complicated thing to do.
Is that proprietary software?
I was afraid about saying that out loud.
Probably.
Yeah, you know, he's probably installing it on a Windows machine,
too. The other thing you can do, Scott, and people are normally pretty – is this a laptop or a desktop machine?
It's a desktop. It's about 4 years old.
And is it a brand name like a Dell or something like that?
Actually, it's Systematic.
Systematic.
Max, I'm sorry.
So you can probably go on their site and look at the model number. But if you want to get a little more geeky, you can actually – unplug the computer turn it off and unplug it. Take the panel off and take a look at on the motherboard itself. There's going to be some information on there, probably a model number and a name. You can look that up and do a Google search on just the text strings in there, and you'll see what kind of RAM it supports.
That's a pain,
and
though, man.
It's a pain, but if
they don't have it on a sticker, you got to take the modules out and squint at the sticker.
Oh, I wouldn't look at the RAM. Don't look at the RAM because the RAM won't tell you.
Some software, I don't know if it was a Norton package or what, that used to tell me my motherboard, yeah, what kind of RAM I had and everything like that. And I've been searching high and low on here. I run Windows XP Professional, and I thought maybe there would be something there. But
yeah, it's below the Windows level. I mean, there are applications like this one from Crucial, but you can do this yourself. The other thing I recommend is that if you've had your machine running in your house for a while and you haven't taken the panel off, it's always a good time to pull out dust and stuff. You can take the vacuum cleaner and just suck up everything you can.
It's running right now with the panel off.
Okay, well, actually, you should run a machine with the panel on. The airflow helps get the dust out. But
and you had a question about a hard drive too, right?
Yeah, I want to upgrade my hard drive. You guys are always harping on the fact that they're eventually going to fail, and I've had the system probably for 5 years now. And I got a 250 gig, but it's so full it won't even do disk cleanup right now. It won't even defrag because there's not enough free space on it. So I was going to buy like a 750 gigabyte, and I wanted to basically make that the default. Do I get something like Ghost and then just...
I want to
put the entire content, including the operating system, onto the new drive and then just...
Yeah, you could do that. You've kind of got a two-problem situation, though, if you're running out of space. So you might want to get, like, two extra drives. Also, you know, getting a premium drive, like a 750-gigabyte drive, you're going to pay a lot of money for that. And your machine can actually take a couple more drives, most likely. You might want to consider getting two smaller ones that are cheaper. Then you can install your OS on one, and you can move your files onto the other. Just a thought, because actually moving on a full hard drive with a Ghost application onto another drive is going to be a little challenging.
Yeah, but no matter what you do, make backups.
Make backups. There you go. So get another drive for backups.
If I get another drive, then how do I move my operating system onto the new drive?
You do use a ghosting
type. Or you suggest just leave it? I'm afraid the 250 is going to fail eventually because it is kind of running into some problems.
You know, I would recommend reinstalling.
You move to GNUSense. It's easy.
Yeah. Well, I would recommend reinstalling your OS on the new drive. And then migrating stuff over manually because the OS XP is just a disaster when it comes to time. So
if only we knew somebody who could advise you on how to transfer your life from Windows into free software.
Well, you know, you could go to Larry's
Norwalk exactly.
Southern California.
Send us an email if you're curious about pursuing that any further.
Scott, thank you so much for the call.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Oh, hey, Lyle, there's one other tool, BellArc.com, BellArc Advisor, BellArc.com. It's a system scanner that'll do all your hardware and your software and your licensing as well, if you're curious, and it's free. But, of course, who knows what they're doing in the background.
Is it free software or is it gratis?
It's gratis. I'm sorry. Not Libre.
It's great to have, like, the conscious over
the
your shoulder.
The angel on my shoulder,
out.
Right?
Well, let's go.
That and the free Latin lesson.
Yeah. Libre.
Gratis.
Yes.
Libre.
So liberty comes from libre, which means, you know, like speech.
But I do have a quick question, though. I'm sorry to just on that's still on topic. That's been that I've been wondering about for a long time is licenses such as the BSD license and the Apache license.
There are two different BSD licenses.
Oh, can you get a little closer to your mic? Sorry.
There are two different BSD licenses, but
fair
continue.
Enough. But they all follow about the same principle. Which
they're
is basically
different, actually.
Oh, they are, really?
Yeah, the Apache licenses, the two BSD licenses are very simple. The Apache license is a lot more complicated than them,
right,
and has a number of interesting provisions having to do with patents and indemnities and so on, which we...
Now, there's been this debate online as to, for example, with the GPL, you have, say, where you are given a certain set of rights, and you are not allowed to restrict those rights for someone further downstream.
Yes.
Whereas the BSD and the Apache licenses tend more toward here you are given the software as it is, and your only restriction is you cannot get rid of the copyright notice.
Well, the Apache license does have some other requirements, but you're right. It allows proprietary versions to be mm-hmm. made. When you see the statistics about the fraction of websites that are running Apache, I think that that includes a large number that are running a proprietary modified version made by IBM. Now, I don't remember its name, and I wouldn't want to recommend it anyway. But the point is the fraction of those who are running free software is substantially less, therefore. Now, if your goal is to be a big success, then you might be happy with that outcome. But my goal is to establish a free society, and I would consider that failure. I wanted to make sure that the thing which has happened to Apache, I wanted to make sure that would not happen to GNU software.
Now, most of the items are I've seen Apache. I have very rarely seen recently a case of Apache being just a binary version. I have seen several modules. I also think of the BSD operating system where you had several closed-sourced or proprietary versions of BSD.
Yeah, there
were. But at the same time, they seem to have fallen by the wayside.
Those died. But the non-free modified version of Apache, I believe, is doing very, very well.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, when we talk about Apache, we're talking about the default web server in the world. So if you go to a website, typically the actual service behind it is Apache. And that's kind of what I was talking about earlier, about this idea that these issues are not in the face of people. People don't know about these issues. That's kind of why I wanted to have you on the show, Richard, to show people that there's a lot more going on in their world that they're not aware of because it's so technical. And that's one of the difficulties. So that's why I appreciate normally...
Well, actually, this isn't technical.
I was going to say is that you
political.
We normally call technical stuff and talk about that. But this is a very... very broad, non-technical level, this is a justice issue. And it's very fitting for, I think, our audience in general. But so tell me a little bit more. I'm just going to give you the mic in a completely free way. What else would you like to cover that we haven't covered?
Gratis
or libre. Time?
Well, digital restrictions management is an attack on your freedom at two levels. Its purpose is to attack your freedom to copy and access the copies of works that you have.
Right.
But, and that's obvious. Of course, many people don't have been bamboozled into believing that they don't deserve freedom. So they'd fail to get angry at the very idea that somebody's
restricting
out
freedom.
DRM.
Yeah.
And they only get angry when that somebody shafts them in a secondary way as well. But you should get angry at the very idea they're trying to stop you from copying. They shouldn't be allowed to do that. But anyway, DRM attacks your freedom at a second level, which is they make you use non-free software to access the work at all. This is because the format is typically secret, and even when people figure it out and write free software, then the United States practices censorship of software under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. The distribution of free software that can play a DVD, for instance, is illegal in the U.S. That's one example of how our government has taken the side of the megacorporations against the citizens. Yeah. That wouldn't happen in a democracy. So your freedom is being attacked at two levels. We have to regard DRM as attacking us. We have to get angry. Whenever we hear that some scheme involves DRM, we have to say, well, get it out of here. I don't want anything to do with it.
And it's extremely pervasive. I mean,
it's pervasive if you let it be. If you let it be. But once you're sensitized, once you realize that every product with DRM is designed to be defective, then you'll realize you don't want any of those. So we have a campaign. It's called defectivebydesign.org, a campaign of protests against DRM. So you should go to that site and sign up and participate in the protests, but also you should never buy any product with DRM unless you have the means to break the DRM. You personally, if you got them in hand, like if you've got the free software that can play a DVD, then okay, buy DVDs or rent DVDs. Right. But otherwise, you shouldn't do it.
Okay, let's go ahead and take one more call today from Palo Colorado Canyon. Jim, welcome to Geek Speak.
Don't forget that email we've got, Lyle. That's a key one, too.
Morning, guys.
Morning. What's your question today?
Very interesting program. Let me first make an unsolicited recommendation that you stick with your standard theme song at the opening of your show, which you'll never be able to do better than.
Thank you for that input. And actually, if you want to vote on that and kind of give us some feedback, please go to geekspeak.org and contact us and tell us you like the new theme song, you don't. We're going to be trying it kind of both of them on and off for about 3 weeks to get people's opinions.
Okay.
Go on.
Okay, so in Windows with XP, controlling print quality and color or black and white when printing is simple. You click on Print, Properties, select your choices. I now have this iMac with OS 10, what is it, Tiger? I have Leopard. I haven't installed it yet. I can't find any way to specify print quality anywhere for documents or Word or web pages or anything. How do you do that?
It depends on what printer's attached. So the settings for printing has to do with the printer that you select in the top. Now, I'm actually using Leopard right now, so it's a little different interface. Yeah. But that's basically what it's going on. Is probably you are choosing a printer that doesn't have a lot of modifications. I mean, I think that's what's going on. Do you want to be able to print pages and just make them black and white? Is that kind of the issue?
Yeah, I want to choose black and white over color, and I want to choose best quality, normal, fast quality,
right.
Draft.
Yeah, it really has to do with the printer. And the general reason that is that if you have a black and white printer, you're not going to have any choices about whether you want to print color or not.
I've got a OfficeJet 6100. It does all kinds of stuff.
So at the very top, when you have that printer selected, then you want to click that little triangle next to it to open up the extended interface, and then you should have more choices. And there should be a whole another drop down about layout and color matching and paper handling and paper feed and all that kind of stuff.
No kidding. There's a triangle next to the
to the right of the printer name when you go to a print dialog.
Okay.
Okay. There. That's all I'm going to leave for you now because, of course, this is something that's at some level it becomes pretty boring radio. But good luck. All right.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. I see a couple of Macintoshes here. I wonder if Larry could help you migrate to free software.
You know, I really want to have as a user. I do like the idea of free software, but as a user, there are some things on this Macintosh that I don't want to give up. And like my management of photos, I've looked a lot for trying to figure out how to manage photos. I like what Adobe has. They only offer it in OS X and XP.
Sometimes you've got to make a sacrifice for freedom.
And that's right. How do you sleep
freedom,
at night?
Sometimes people had to give their lives.
Yes.
But here we're only talking about inconveniences.
Right.
You know, I don't know if I could sacrifice my life for freedom. How would anyone know that until he's tested? And I never have been. But I can accept inconveniences for the cause of freedom. Anyone can. That doesn't require a hero.
I get that. And I guess personally, I'm just not sold enough to say my freedom of my software comes first, absolutely. But I feel you and I get where you're coming from and I understand it. And I've accepted the limitations of my freedom because of the things that I like on this machine. And I don't know. I think a lot of people feel that way.
It brings up an interesting question. And Richard, I think you've been dealing with this ever since you started. When there is a lack of a solution, what do? You got to build it yourself.
I don't do
right?
it.
But if you could build it yourself, a guy with your skill set could do that, and you've been trying to do that in the case of the kernel for a long time.
Well,
right?
No, we have a free kernel. We have a version of Linux with the non-free firmware blobs removed, and that's a free kernel.
What is the herd then?
Well, we started developing our kernel in 1990 before Linux was even started, and certainly before it was free. So we had to do it then, but it's not crucial now.
Okay.
So we're urging people to work on free software to do other things. You know, to fill in some of the gaps in the applications. Mm-hmm. You might be able to find somebody to work on photo management in free software to do it the way you like.
I might. Okay, any case, Richard Stallman, thank you very much. You want to hear more about what Richard Stallman's doing, you can do today, 1 to 5 at Cabrillo. There's information at geekspeak.org. Or Monday, February 4th at 6:30, an entire lecture about free software. So please tell people that didn't hear the program what's going on. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. You just listened to another episode of GeekSpeak via our podcast. Would you do us a favor? Please go to your favorite podcasting index site, whether it be iTunes, Dig.com, Odeo, or another site, and write a review or give us a vote to let others know what you think about GeekSpeak. Thanks, that'd really help us out. GeekSpeak is supported by PreownedCar.com, PreownedCar.com, where anyone can post their vehicle for sale or browse to purchase a pre-owned car from other car owners. More information available at PreownedCar.com. This is Lyle Troxell for KUSP. Thanks for listening.